We've moved into the 20th edition in our season here of 2020, and what an amazing year it's been for golf. The only thing is that really seems to be positive now is that so many people are playing, and especially with certain other options not possible due to the pandemic, more people seem to be playing golf.
What the message I kind of take out of it is that I'm glad that the PGA Tour is playing. I'm glad the LPGA and the Champions are opening this weekend, resuming play this weekend, reopening. But it shows that perhaps the golf is not driven by what's on TV. It's driven for what it is as a participation activity that is very healthy to play when the weather's good. I mean, the here in Florida, it's not quite so prevalent on the public courses or even the private ones here at PGA Golf Club. But I mean, I know that in Chicago, I see the results. People are out there playing, and that's a good thing.
Just this past weekend, the Women's Western Golf Association wrapped up with a great championship down at Prestwick Country Club down in Frankfort, and it was nice to see just a tournament being run start to finish. I was out there one day to cover and talk to some of the players. Fans were not let in, or spectators, patrons, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call them, but it was really good to see a major tournament being run. And now the Western Amateur, the men, is underway at Crooked Stick Golf Club in Carmel, Indiana. I'll be arriving there tomorrow for some coverage on Thursday and Friday. But it's good. We have some tournaments going again. And amazingly, after so many cancellations, it's just really good to be back out on the golf course and letting the competitive players play some golf.
Well, I know that the field in the Women's Western was without a number of entries. I think it was over 20. I'm wondering, and you may know this, I haven't seen anything on it, but there were travel restrictions, and they had a pretty good international contingent in the Men's Western Amateur at Crooked Stick. I'm wondering if they all made it. Of course, that tournament, I'm sure, had a waiting list. I know Mike Small had five players in the field and I think two or three others on the waiting list to get in. So I would expect that one to get the full 156 players, which that's a positive too, because the ability to travel around, it's kind of got me puzzled as to just how difficult it is, but I'm sure it's very difficult for people coming from overseas to try to play.
The international player list in the field a couple of weeks ago for the Western Amateur was 30. 25 players actually teed off yesterday being listed from outside of America. Actually, five of them managed to shoot under par. The rest of them were pretty much not too competitive. You question whether or not they went through the travel, how much when they left the country or, you know, overseas, wherever they came from. Did they get a lot of chance to play? Did they play many competitive rounds? That's really hard to say. All I know is that Indiana only had one player in the tournament 3 weeks ago. And when the players teed off yesterday, they had three. So, but another thing that has really kind of popped up this week, and it was first brought to my attention, a great story by our good friend Gary D'Amato up at Wisconsin.golf, is that the Wisconsin State Amateur is this week, and it's at the famed Milwaukee Country Club that is really hard to get on and play if you're not a member or has a friend that is a member there that will invite you. And realistically, Len, if I live in Wisconsin, I live in Illinois, I'm a top amateur player, you know what? I might want to go play in the state amateur and play Milwaukee Country Club. And, you know, instead of being in a tournament that requires a lot of golf for five straight days, why not enter a tournament that's 18 holes for 3 days and get a chance to play a historic club like Milwaukee Country Club that really is probably one of the top 20, 25 courses in the country to get access to.
That is a very interesting story, because there's another side of the coin there. You do have to, you can come over from Illinois and play, provided you're a member at a club in Wisconsin and have declared that you won't play in the corresponding tournament in your home state. Well, the Illinois State Amateur was canceled long ago, so that was no issue. And that undoubtedly encouraged a lot of players to try to get into the Wisconsin tournament. On the other hand, there's another thing that's interesting about that. The Wisconsin State Amateur lost three players, including its champions of the last 2 years, because they decided to play in the Western Amateur. And also doing that was another Wisconsin player, Pearson Hunt, who was headed to the University of Illinois. You know, they lost a little bit of players too, but they gained a whole bunch from Illinois. My suspicion strongly is that won't happen. That the rules will be changed before next year. That the Wisconsin State Amateur having a load of players from Illinois, that's kind of hard to take. And I think the Illinois State Amateur, I don't see how there could ever be a reciprocity or a similar rule in Illinois to bring in players from Wisconsin, Indiana, and Iowa or something. But it was a very interesting development for this week. No question about that. It's be interesting to see how the Illinois guys do at Milwaukee Country Club. That is a great treat to play that course. I've never played it, but I understand it's one of the best private clubs anywhere.
Tell you what, I just think that with Illinois not having a state amateur this year and the fact that it's Milwaukee Country Club, I think that's the dual attraction there. And I sense next year that regardless of where the Wisconsin State Am is played, I got a feeling that if COVID and the pandemic is sort of passed and Illinois has its state amateur and Wisconsin has a different golf course, that the State Am of Wisconsin will not really draw that many players, if any, from Illinois. So we'll see how that all shakes out and moves forward in 20 and 21. Speaking of 2021, the Women's Western Amateur will go to the Park Ridge Country Club, the historic Park Ridge Country Club that opened 114 years ago in 1906. And next year, they will host the Women's Western on their 115th birthday. And I was out there yesterday, got a chance to cruise around with architect Greg Martin and his construction team that is doing renovation work out there. And they're sort of doing it on the fly. It's amazing how this is all getting done about four holes at a time. It is primarily a bunker project. However, some greens are getting expanded back to their old size that they were some years ago, which will also give people from the WWGA more pin placement options next year. They are taking out something that was put in about 20 years ago by a different architect who decided that back in the 1900 age era, the teardrop mounds, as they're called, that would be something neat to add. And I'm not sure that they were originally there in 1906. But anyway, what they did is they made a lot of the holes at Park Ridge play somewhat blind, not only off the tee, but approach shots as well. And so as a result, the a majority of the teardrop moundings are being removed and opening up sight lines in the golf course. Some of the higher grass that was put in around bunkers that was very difficult to maintain has been taken out. The white tour sand is going to get added and replace the old brown-colored sand. Some trees have been removed, and at some point down the road, they will probably take out a few more. A very minimal, extremely minimal amount of yardage was added to the course that, if you read their scorecard this year, is at 6578. And I'm not sure that yardage has done much more than get up to about 6,600, but there is a couple new tee boxes added. And down the road in a year or so, they will probably add a few more, and the yardage might go up by a couple hundred yards, even though there's not a lot they can do there because they're sort of landlocked by the surrounding neighborhood. But anyway, I'm really giving Park Ridge Country Club a lot of credit just because they were supposed to start this project after Labor Day and decided in the spring that in March there was nothing going on. And then, you know, April, things were looking bad with the pandemic and golf wasn't going to open in April and play was going to be limited in May. So they brought the crews in early and said, get to work.
Well, you know, I think this is really an interesting part of the Chicago golf scene this year. We've talked in the in previous shows about Schaumburg and Sportsman's, the work going on, the public courses there. One is Settlers Hill is either about to begin a work or maybe it just already has out in Geneva. And now a private club is tackling the same thing, which is a big project in these tough times where we hear about, tough economic times, but they're willing to tackle golf projects like this. I think it's a good thing. Park Ridge is going to be an interesting thing. The private clubs, you're right, they're landlocked. Most all these older private clubs would be landlocked. But, you know, they don't need 7,000-yard courses. If they dreamed of hosting the a U.S. Open, then they're kind of out of luck these days. But the 67,000-yard course, that'd be just perfect for any, you know, more than enough for any of the private clubs we've got here. So I love Park Ridge. That's going to be fun to see an old course like that, a course with a lot of history over the years back on the tournament scene.
I have to give it to you there. You know what? Pete Dye would have loved to build that 67,000-yard course you just mentioned.
Yeah, these slips of the tongue, you know.
Yep. Well, you know what? I'm looking forward to going to Crooked Stick the next couple of days. And, you know, what a great golf course and Pete's pride and joy. And, you know, in some ways, it's almost like a theme park. You know, they got a covered bridge out there, which is one of the natural attractions there in the area in Hamilton County. And there's some railroad cars used as bridges to go along with Pete's railroad ties. So it's quite a theme at Crooked Stick. You know, you mentioned a couple of things on the renovation side. We've got some openings this weekend. Of course, Schaumburg, the final nine holes, five hard years worth of work inside the clubhouse and out on the golf course gets wrapped up Saturday when the first golfers are allowed to tee off on the championship nine. And I know they've got a full tee sheet on Saturday. A lot of people looking forward to getting out there and playing. And if you haven't played Schaumburg since the renovation work started a couple years ago, don't go over there and play 18 holes. Play all 27. Trust me, you'll have a great day. And if you're somebody who hasn't gotten out a lot this year because of the pandemic and you really want to get out and play some golf, go play all 27 holes in Schaumburg. It'll make for a great day. And then stop in and have a cold one at Chandler's Chop House right there in the clubhouse. Always a great idea. And then, Len, as you all know, up in Michigan, Forest Dunes, the new 10-hole par 3 course is opening this Saturday as well. We tip our cap or golf visor to the folks up there because here they were just on the verge of opening 2 weekends ago when what's believed to be a small tornado blew through there and took out a lot of trees. It took, I believe, close to 5-6 days to get Forest Dunes reopened. It took about a day and a half to get the Loop golf course reopened. And so now everything seems to be up and running, and I'm sure it'll be a great day on Saturday with the addition of the 10-hole par 3 course that I'm not sure what name they're going to put on it. Maybe they haven't named it yet, but from pictures, it looks like it's going to be a good one and a fun one.
Yeah, the release is just call it the course, and I just got to have a name. But I've been to Forest Dunes a number of times over the years. I played the reverse course and planning on seeing this new 10-hole course real soon. But, you know, there's another story coming up real quickly before that one is right after that course and all these in Schaumburg opens, and that's in the Illinois Open, which is next week at the White Eagle. The defending champion, David Cook, who told me this week that he's out in California and he didn't bring his clubs with him. He has turned to caddying. He gave a shot to the European Tour. He's it didn't work out so well. He got back here, and the qualifying school for the Korn Ferry Tour was canceled. So he needed a, you know, a newly married guy. He took on a job caddying, and on the Corn Ferry Tour, the first guy he caddied for won a tournament out in Mexico right before the tournaments were all called off by the pandemic, and place was idled for 3 months. So he, rather than play, he hooked up with a, he did do some playing, but he's hooked up with Chesson Hadley, and he caddied for him last week. Chesson didn't make the cut in Minnesota, but he's with him again in the Barracuda Championship this week. David tells me he's willing to take a full shot as a full-time caddy if he can get a job doing that, but he is going to try. If Chesson makes the cut, he's going to have David's going to have a hard time making his first tee time at White Eagle, but he tells me he's going to give it a try. And he hasn't been playing much golf, as I say. He's been working as a caddy, but he's won the tournament twice before. I wish him nothing but the best in going for a third one.
Well, last year, the White Eagle Golf Club wrapped up a few-year renovation process, and Todd Quitno of Lohman and Quitno, Bob Lohman, actually did the renovation work out there. The golf course looks great. I played it last fall with our good friend and board member and Illinois Open chairman from the club, Chip Wagner, who showed me the improvements. And I got to tell you, it was, of course, looked fantastic. And of course, Todd Quitno also did the work at Schaumburg that we've talked about. You mentioned Settlers Hill. I should have mentioned that before. But in just a couple of weeks from now, there is going to be work done on the property, but outside the field of play on the golf course. So the golf course will be open through the rest of the year. No holes will get shut down. But some of the work that needed to be done outside the field of play will be getting done this year. And then next year, they'll go at it full speed. And then in my interview with Greg Martin this morning, it appears that both Naperbrook and Springbrook in Naperville Park District, there could be some work starting over there in 21 and work in 22 and 23 on both of those Naperville Park District golf courses. And then I asked Greg Martin, I said, you know, so many compliments about your work at Oak Meadows, the Preserve, as it's being called now. People are wondering when you're going to go across the street to Maple Meadows. And Greg threw it back in my court, says, talk to your radio partner, Ed Stevenson. You know, there's a big new clubhouse happening at the Preserve. And I think Greg is hopeful, and perhaps Ed is hopeful, that there could be some work coming to Maple Meadows once the DuPage County Forest Preserve District wraps up with the current construction of the clubhouse, and they get the preserve completely finished. And then also after that, who knows, maybe they will shift focus over to Maple Meadows across the street.
Yeah, you know, all that work that's been done, being done, and all that's creating a great things for down the road and for the Chicago golf scene. I particularly right now am interested in seeing what White Eagle is going to look like. The club right after it wasn't around very long when they hosted two LPGA tournaments, of which I was covering, of course, because back in those days I was with the Chicago Sun-Times, and the Chicago Sun-Times was the more of a presenting sponsor, although it had its name on the title for both those for those tournaments. And we saw Dottie Mockery, now Dottie Pepper, the TV star on Golf Channel, was the champion of the first one there. And I think Cindy Schreier won the second one. But it was a good tournament site for the women back then, and I'm sure it would have been for the men if there was a tournament that kind of lended itself to a newer course back in those days. But I'll be interested in seeing what's going on at White Eagle and just how it plays for the best players in Illinois and the Illinois Open. It's going to be a big next week.
Well, it's just nice, Len, you know, having had the women's Western Amateur last week, the men's amateur this week, the Illinois Open next week, 3 weeks in a row, three tournaments to cover. Mm-hmm. It's a good feeling. It really is to get back out and cover some tournaments. And then at the end of August, we'll have the Illinois PGA section over at Medina. Always a fun place to go cover golf. You know, Len, some of the things we've talked about this year have been equipment. And this year, I'm not sure, you know, how everybody's calendar regarding new equipment will change because of the pandemic. But I can tell you this, that today I went out to Misswood Golf Club and picked up my new Callaway Maverick driver, my new Maverick irons, my new Callaway Jaws wedges. So I'm very anxious to get out and play them. And I had a chance to talk to their fitting specialists, Chris Iorati and Eric Russell. And I asked them how the fitting business is going. And if you'd like to call them and get a fitting at Misswood, call them today. And they'll see you in about 3 weeks. That's how busy they are with people looking at new equipment.
Well, you know, I got fascinated. More of a humorous thing. They've come up with a new putter, Callaway, and it's called the Chicago model, but all I've seen is the pictures of it. I don't see where the connection to Chicago is in there just yet. But anyway, the things are happening on the equipment front, and the cycle is all off. Usually you'd expect to see new things at the PGA Merchandise Show in January and then go from there. Every day I'm hearing things, seeing things on the on my emails and just checking websites, and a lot of things are going on by all the companies. It's really, in a lot of ways, it's a very exciting time for golf. It's an unusual time, a difficult time, but still an exciting time.
Word has reached me that the putting company that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, Lab Putters, they might be looking to make a move and get in under the umbrella of yet a bigger company. So look for that to happen. It would be interesting to see if that line could expand if they tied in with a bigger golf equipment company, as you know, you just mentioned the Chicago putter is part of the Sean Toulon, and it's now Toulon Odyssey Callaway Group. And you know, as we saw with Scotty Cameron years ago when he came out with his first line for Titleist, there was a lot of tie-ins to the state of California. There was the Laguna and Newport and, you know, a lot of these places that were tied in with various communities in California. Well, Sean Toulon's line is tied in with different cities around America. And why he picked the cities he did, I don't know, but there is Seattle and there's San Diego and there is Las Vegas. There is Memphis. There's Chicago. There's about seven cities in general. And who knows? There's a certain reason why, but that's another story for another day.
I got to find out that story. It fascinates me. I've never heard of putters being named for cities before, but maybe it's a gimmick. There's always gimmicks with putters, and you know, it's fun. Golf is supposed to be a fun game, and usually it is when you're playing bad. But that's a story that the naming of those putters as a series is kind of intrigued me, so I'm going to be investigating that one.
All right, Len. Well, next week we'll do it again later in the week after the conclusion of the Illinois Open at White Eagle Golf Club. We'll have something to talk about there as well.